This week on RSPB Update, the Ranch Out of Time pre-release brings new farming eggs in anticipation of the 120 farming release in November. We'll talk about why this is so special to us. Also, a look in on Epic Jam and thoughts on how August and September could have been different. This is RSPB Update, episode 747, recorded Thursday, October 17th, 2019. Quit thy brine rat roll. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSPB Update. This week is, you know, most of you listening probably would think that, oh, this is just a bit of an update that we could take in to get us ready for the Ranch Out of Time next month. And, you know, there's really not much to write home about unless you're a diehard farming nerd. But this episode is indeed very special. But, you know, before I just, you know, continue on a monologue, Tanis, you're here as you are each and every week. And
thank you,
sir. We're just gonna talk about the week's updates and reminisce a bit, in particular, with this Ranch Out of Time pre-release update. And, you know, we were told at RuneFest that the eggs for 120 farming would be released before the skill update went live, and lo and behold, here we are, the middle of October, and it has hit. And, you know, I'm just going to say that this is perhaps one of the most special things I can talk about on RSPB Update. And many of you listeners probably don't know why. And I know, Tanis, you didn't even know why when I mentioned this to you.
Oh, I didn't.
And the reason is that all the way back in June of 2005, RSPB Update number 1 on June the 12th of 2005 covered its first update of the seeds and farming equipment when seeds were added to the Master Farmers and the seed stall in Drainer Village back then. And of course, this was to prepare for the launch of the farming skill. I think Bird's Nests were also launched at the same time. Actually, yeah, they were, because I remember us talking about how in addition to the seeds for the trees that you could get, you would also be able to get eggs. And for the longest time, these eggs just sat in our inventories and we had no idea what they were for until, of course, summoning came around. And those eggs still don't have much to say that you get from those bird's nests. But, you know, this is just a bit of a chance for me to reminisce on this and say that we started RSPB Update off with talking about farming pre-release content, in particular seeds, farming equipment, and bird's nests. And here we are, 14 years later, 14 and a half years later almost, talking about another farming pre-release that is adding eggs into game. So that was a little bit, I don't know, humbling, special, I guess you could say, because we're back to where we started, at least for me.
Nostalgic, almost. Huh?
Yeah. So what you can do with this is when you're either Jadinko hunting, big game hunting, or participating in Slayer on Anachronia, you will have a chance to unlock an egg for one of the farming creatures that's coming out next month. It's worth noting that salamanders are not out yet in terms of the eggs that you can get for them. So for anybody wondering on that, that's what that is all about. And, you know, these things are pretty rare. I will say that. I hunted around 250, 260 draconic Jadinkos on Anachronia, and I got one Jadinko egg.
Huh.
Uh-huh.
Jeez. And you had to hunt Jadinkos for it?
Yeah. But
I said I'd never do it again.
But there's one thing that many people probably glossed over when Anachronia came out, is that the Jadinkos on Anachronia are already set up and ready to go. Yes, there are some that require Juju Hunter potions, right? But the rest of the Jadinkos don't even need their habitats set up.
Well, that's a little bit less annoying, I guess.
Right. And you see, that's the thing that we didn't really realize and wasn't really made a big deal of until it was talked about, with until it was talked about actually just this past week. I knew this going in, but I was, you know, talking about this and people were saying, I don't want to hunt Jadinkos. And I said, no, you just have to go hunt them. It's like hunting any other hunter creature.
Well, I mean, but okay. Remember like a long, long time ago, like back when I was first maxing, Jadinkos were
the best hunting slot, method. Right.
Right. And that topped out at like between 180 and 200.
Yeah.
There's, you know, that's just such a low rate nowadays.
Yeah.
To go and, I mean, especially because you had to, I mean, granted, there's less setup with this one, but what a pain. Like,
yeah.
They were so slow.
So, yeah, you don't need to set up the airhead, which means you don't need to set up the habitat. The only ones that need the Juju Hunter potion are the cannibal, aquatic, camouflaged, and draconic Jadinkos, and the plant you need to pour the hunter potion on is right there and ready to go if you want to hunt those ones. So
yeah, well, and you should really only be doing draconic, right? I mean, the other ones don't even get you close to that 200, right?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I wasn't really out for that, and let me tell you why. I went for the igneous Jadinkos.
Do they have a higher drop rate or something?
No. The igneous Jadinkos, the vine they give, is what's used to make the Juju farming potion.
Oh.
So I stocked up on that too.
Yeah, that's good thinking, I guess.
And so for anybody who wants to do igneous Jadinkos, they're actually just right outside the base camp where the agility course starts.
And so do you still use like a little plant trap?
Yeah, you still use the plant trap. You know, I put the hunter cape on, and I didn't notice much of a difference in terms of speed.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
In terms of how quick the trap deploys. So I don't know if the marmoset plants are working with the hunter cape.
Have you noticed a difference in with box traps?
I haven't tried box traps, to be honest.
Okay.
So... and, you know, it's just, of course, if anybody wants to go hunt these, remember your hunter cape if you have that already. Draconic Jadinkos are south of base camp in the north part of the Bagrata Rex area. And with that, you just need a Juju Hunter Potion and away you go. So,
Shane, was there anything in the post about can the tracker get these eggs?
And, you know, that's something I've also been attempting. Ever since this update hit, I've been using the trapper in the standard farm to see if he will return one of these eggs. Nothing yet. Though, granted, all he's been returning are cows and chickens and rabbits.
You're fired.
So he hasn't really brought much interesting to me, and it's stupid rare. But yeah, there's one egg for each Jadinko. There's one for four of the Slayer dinosaurs, which, depending on your proficiency with combat, might be your more preferred method of going. And there's also one for each of the big game hunter dinosaurs. And as we saw with my Jadinko hunting igneous Jadinkos, the egg you get is random.
Well, there's going to be, you know, a little bit more reason to do Big Game Hunter now. If you get an egg, it's probably going to sell for quite a bit.
Yeah.
And you know, I ain't doing it, and I will definitely pay for it.
It's Big Game Hunter isn't as annoying once you've unlocked the perks from the Hunter Shop and Tier 3 Hunter rep in the base camp. But it's worth saying that these eggs are not tradable right now.
They will be, like, in the end.
Yeah, they will be. They will be in the end.
Yeah. So go stock up and get rich.
Yeah, my goal is to get one of each of the eggs before it releases, and then just breed them based on that.
See, I won't know until people crunch the numbers, and then I'll know what the best setup is at that point.
And see, the thing, I'm not really concerned about that because it is possible to, I think it's the good breeding trait. You can get the good breeding trait on your animals, and it has a higher chance of producing a different species. That's how, if you, for instance, breed two blue dragons, you can sometimes get a red out of it.
Huh.
So it is possible to cross species based on that. And, you know, also if you mix two different species together, it's going to be random which one you get.
Okay.
So, I mean, as long as you have a male and a female, you should be fine, at least in the early start. And, you know, there is, of course, going to be materials from all of these things that are going to be in demand when 120 farming hits. And based on what I'm seeing here, the fact there's only four eggs from the four slayer creatures that drop them, I would say that you're probably to best focus on the Jadinkos and the big game hunter dinosaurs, because that will handle 14, that'll handle 19 out of, you know, the 23 creatures that are launching.
Yeah.
In terms of the various styles of them.
Well, no slayer creatures aren't.
They're not something I mean, you can AFK.
No. No. I was going to say, like, it's not that they're too hard, but they're harder, and yeah, it's not like an easy mob.
Whereas with Jadinko hunting, it's just lots of clicking.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
And I mean, you don't need bait. You don't need the new swan. It's just a matter of standard, old fashioned hunting. So, I mean, I'm not the hunter expert, so there might be something I'm missing on this that can make me a little bit more efficient on this. But to me, I was having fairly good success rates with just my 99 hunter cape and the 5 Marmoset plant traps.
How long did it take you to get 200?
Oh, a couple hours. Yeah. So it's not a huge amount, let's just say. There's one upshot of this, though. If you want to do the big game hunter side, the bait for these creatures is going to go up.
Yeah, I could see that. Although, do you think that's going to bring more people into big game hunter, or just make it a little more profitable?
It's going to make it a little bit more profitable, because I mean, we're at the point with Anachronia where the people who know how to do big game hunter and enjoyed it will go back. The people who have passed judgment on it already will just, you know, move past it and find something else to do in the meantime, right? And, you know,
yeah,
this can be a game of money too. Whoever has the most money on launch will be able to pick up whatever dinosaurs they want. So
yeah,
and you know, well, I'm hoping on rolling the dice and getting a male and a female, and if not, I hope some of in our community will be nice enough to trade me.
You know, after the ordeal I went through with the dragons, I'll be buying it this time.
What was your problem with the? Oh, right, getting the dragons on first day.
and I would get them, but it took forever to get a male and a female.
Yeah. Definitely. And, you know, every dragon that I have had in my POH or POF has just been started off based off of two that I got for breeding.
Oh, wow.
I started off with two blues, and I eventually picked up two blacks from someone who donated them to me, but the rest has just been based off of the two initial creatures that I got, and they mutated from there.
See, at first I didn't know what I was doing, so I went and tried to get one of every color, because I thought you'd have to do that to breed, you know, for royal, which I still don't have royal. Whatever.
Huh.
Not even.
I get one or two a week at this point.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have mine set up for that, though. Like I said,
traits
and all that, it doesn't increase my bean count, so I don't really worry about it.
Yeah.
That I know of. I don't think it does.
All right. And, you know, these are pretty rare right now. So for anybody who wants to go collect these, I would say only do these if you're willing to put in a substantial amount of time into it right now. So just keep that in mind. And, yeah, that's pretty much it on the Big Game Hunter, or rather the Ranch Out of Time pre-release egg collecting. Hunt Jadinkos or big game hunter dinosaurs, or kill the slayer dinosaurs on Anachronia, and there's a chance you'll get one of the new dragon eggs. Also this week, Iron Man celebrates its 5-year anniversary.
It's been 5 years already.
Yeah. Broadcast will trigger when an Iron Man account hits the 5-year milestone. A special title has been added for Iron Man and Hardcore Iron Man. No spoilers. You'll need to find this one for yourselves, they say. And a special trimmed version of the Iron Man armor has been added as well. I don't know any actually, I do know Iron Man characters, and I actually even know Hardcore Iron Man characters that have existed for 5 years, which is amazing.
Wow, they've been super careful.
Yeah, yeah.
Are they level 3 skillers?
No. We got one in Clan Quest, iHerbla, who's been on the bit before. He is, I think, maxed.
Okay.
And his first 99 is an Iron Man invention.
Really?
Yeah, really.
That had to be rough.
Yeah, I bet it was. So before we move on to the patch notes, there was a bit of a footnote in the news post this week about new merchandise on the official merch store. You can purchase a RuneFest 2019 pin, Dragonkin symbols, amongst other things that are Anachronia themed. But they have some new enamel mugs for the fishing, slayer, and fire making skills. Granted, ooh. I mean, yeah, they look really nice, and if these were for farming or herblore, you'd bet I'd be picking up both of those. So, I mean, if there's anybody interested listening who wants to, you know, shift the product on the store to have some farming or herblore mugs, you'll get 2 sales from me. So I would very much like that to happen. And I think it would make sense given next month's updates.
Well, yeah, I'd probably get a mug. I'm down for it now.
You could get a Slayer nice one. Mug. Slayer is black with the Slayer logo on it. Fire making is, of course, orange, and fishing is blue. And they're the old-style enamel mugs, so they got that kind of retro look to them. So.
All right. I'm still waiting for them to add fitted hats. Like, if that ever happens, I want to buy a few.
Yeah, that'd be good. Me too. I'd like that, a farming one too. I know there's also these keychains with the skill capes. Once again, farming herblore, please.
Yeah,
that would be great. But yeah, the mugs I think are the easiest ones to use because you know you just use them every day and you use them without thinking. So what I'd probably choose on there. So, let's see. Is there anything else new on here? You could get a printed map of Gielinor, 45 by 30 centimeters, or at the largest, 76 by 50 centimeters.
Now I've got to do math. Ugh, what's the conversion?
I have no idea.
Right.
I have no idea on that. But Angelscapes, which of course is where you get the cape key rings from. There's a quest trimmed quest cape one. And of course these have all existed for a long time, but I figured I'd just scroll through these and talk about them for anybody who hasn't seen them yet.
See, I wanted the map that was like the big huge mouse type pad thing,
right?
You know? Yeah, like
as a map.
Yeah,
like a map one on that, right?
Yeah, I thought that would have been cool.
Yeah, my desks aren't big enough for that.
Well, you need a bigger desk.
Yeah, I would like that.
I mean, you've got all this stuff going on, Shane. Where are you putting it?
Tannis, there is a map of Gielinor, desk map.
Is there? Oh, okay.
Yeah, there is.
Sweet. Yeah,
31 by 11 inches.
That's actually perfect. Huh. I'll give myself a Christmas present.
There's also a map of Gielinor mouse mat as well.
Oh, that's cool.
These ones are new. Orders commence shipping the week of October 7th. This one's 9.7 by 7.7 inches.
See, guys, buy their swag and then maybe we won't have to buy their keys.
Yeah. I don't use mouse pads anymore.
You don't?
No.
What's the thinking behind that? Why?
I mean, I don't know. I just stopped when laser mice became a thing.
Oh, I guess they're not necessary now,
yeah,
are they?
Yeah, they're not necessary, really. I mean, sure, they protect the surface and they protect the mouse, but eh? I don't know.
Huh.
All right. Moving on to the patch notes for this week. So we've got a few of them, especially we wanted to follow up from last week. So starting off, added a windmill world map icon for the windmill at Manor Farm. Of course, if anybody needs to make their own flower. By player request, a pair of patrolling Berthorpe guards have been added to the Berthorpe Main Street. On mobile, a large number of items now have tooltips. These include the Clan Vex, Rune Pouches, the Ring of Slaying, and more. And if you want to see what these tooltips are, just tap and hold on the item and you'll be able to see it. An issue preventing a small number of players from choosing their spouse during the Throne of Miscellanea quest has been fixed. And of course, this follows up from the patch note a few weeks back where you'd be able to choose whichever spouse that you want. You can no longer repeatedly trigger the trimmed completionist cape broadcast when reobtaining the cape. I don't know how players would do that, but that might explain some of the spam that we've been seeing for a while. Players no longer erroneously receive a message about having no charges on a fishing rod-o-matic. And for the bank, added a reset tab order option when right-clicking the All tab.
Oh.
Moving on into other changes, you can now use Arbuck seeds on the player-owned farm food troughs. In the alchemy game at the Mage Training Arena, the values of the items converted will now change when the alchemy guardian calls the change, no matter if an explorer's ring has been changed. Verac, the defiled set effect, now works correctly in Legacy Combat mode. And here's the big one. Corrected the Master Clue Scroll anagram for Brother Tranquility to quit thy brine rat roll.
Someone must have heard about that, huh?
Yeah. I mean that was a real funny discussion last week on the podcast.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Apparently Rebirth Not Ritually was what they thought worked, but we actually got one now that works. Quit Thy Brine Rat Roll, which has all the letters in it. Most importantly, has the Q.
Yeah, most importantly. All right.
Moving on. The buff bar font size scaling issue has now been tweaked to be a consistent size on the desktop. They're back to what it used to be. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I guess I had gotten used to it. I liked the way it was. It was a little bit easier to read, before they reverted, I thought. But.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to beat too much on this horse here because I don't want to raise any expectations. But the fact there was a large font there shows that we can have larger fonts.
Yeah. And I hope someday, man.
That someday we get font and interface scaling.
Yeah. Because it was nice to be able to just take a smaller glance. Usually I have to like really, really look.
And it was a little bit less. To be fair, for anyone listening, Tanis uses a screen magnifier.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when fonts are bigger, that's in general a help to you. And I'm just glad it's not blurry anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Updated the QBD warning message to match the recommended combat level on the Beast Interface entry. And updated the values for recommended combat levels for each boss on the Beast Interface. They were a bit too high previously, and everything has been scaled down a bit, I think, to take into account the way modern armor and whatnot works in-game. So I think that's good.
It's good, but does it even have any meaning, you know? Like, because I look at that stuff and I'm like, but what does that really mean, you know? I don't know, maybe David would probably know, but I look at it and it doesn't mean anything to me.
To be fair, they're just guidelines.
Ah, okay.
Right?
I mean...
So I don't think there's that much of a...
Yeah.
So... And finally, family gauntlets from the family crest quest can now be enchanted once again.
Oh, they couldn't be enchanted before?
No.
For a while?
No.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, those are so useful. Uh-huh. That's probably, like, one of the most useful quest items in the whole entire game.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, the goldsmithing ones or the smithing ones are really good for after the smithing rework. The cooking ones combined with the cooking cape means you'll never burn anything.
Yeah, no.
And, gosh, what's the other one? Chaos ones? What are those doing in this day and age?
I don't know. I'm not sure I knew what they ever did. All I ever used was the smithing and cooking. Yeah, I know there's a third one. I don't even remember.
They're chaos gauntlets. They provide a 10% damage boost to all bolt spells.
Bolt spells?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's why we didn't know it. Okay.
That's
sure.
Bottom of the bucket when it comes to today, really.
Oh, bolt spells. Oh, so the, like, band of spells.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. What is that, like a 40, 50 range? It's got to be fairly low.
Very low.
Yeah. Ugh. Okay.
The smelting... gauntlets after family crest, when worn, smelted bars go directly to the metal bank.
And it gives you 60.
Uh-huh.
Out of pop. Uh-huh. Yeah, so beautiful. Like, yeah.
And the best part is, if you have the smithing elite outfit, or the mining elite outfit, they count.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they do for the cookie, the sous chef as well.
Yeah, they do. So... Isn't it nice living in an era when we have nice things?
It is. I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, huh.
it's everything like this that, you know, people say, why don't you try old school? It's like, okay, but there's the interface. There's all the modern creature conveniences. And then there's all these modern actual gameplay conveniences as well.
Yeah. You know, it all goes... It all goes back to a communication, and luckily Shane's pretty steady ship, but I seem to, I will rock with the waves from time to time. And, I mean, just think of where we're at versus 6 weeks ago at this point, mm-hmm.
We're in a much better position.
And a hell of a lot more positive. I mean, feeling a lot better about where the game's at and where it's going to be going. You know what? I think we have a question that we can talk about some of this a little later.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to the live stream then. This was what they called the Epic Jam initial showcase. And, of course, the idea behind this was to showcase some of the work that's been done thus far on all the Game Jam updates. So I think when we look at what we have, it's something we can be very proud of here. So starting off, I was a bit surprised in seeing this. And, you know, Mod Rolly and Mod Raven are, of course, working on the low-level introductory player-owned farm or player-owned lake, as it's being called.
Where did that come from?
I don't know.
What?
There'd be geese, ducks, and swans. It'd be right in Taverly. And the idea behind this is you'll be able to buy the eggs from the Lady of the Lake. Apparently, my autocorrect called it Lady of the Lack. but this is in line with the survey question to increase skills to level 30. And the idea behind this is that you would be able to experience everything that 1 to 20 or 1 to 30 farming would have to offer if they decided to increase the free-to-play cap on the skill to 30.
And it's going to help you get to the manor farm requirements.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to effectively teach you how to do the player-owned farm. So.
Yeah.
Now,
but like if you don't want to be running around doing allotments and stuff like that, this might be a way that you can do it with, through this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So looking at this, Maude Rowley also came on stream and talked about the design for Elemental Workshop 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah, because, you know, 5 isn't enough.
Yeah, and you know, there's one good thing that came from this. He said that the puzzle ceiling that they did with Elemental Workshop 3 would be as hard as it gets.
I mean, good.
Because 4 was easier than 3.
But 3 was stupid.
Yeah.
Like, it was just stupid. Like, and even with the guide, it took an hour.
And the idea behind this is you'll be able to have Astral and Nature Runes in Elemental Workshop 5, Law and Death in Elemental Workshop 6, and Blood and Soul in Elemental Workshop 7. So the idea is to eventually complete it and not have to drag it out year after year on this front. So there was no video to show on Elemental Workshop side, just because it's they're effectively in the design phase for this right now. There would be 2 different puzzles in each quest, 1 for each type of rune. And the goal of this in finishing the quest series would be to make the Elemental Workshop armor set be worth something, so that there's a reason you'd want to use it at each of the various levels out there.
I was thinking it should, like, maybe half or some, like, elemental damage. Something like that.
Oh, that might be interesting.
I mean, something like niche like that, but...
But then what do you do with the Astral Nature, Law, Death, and Blood and Soul?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but...
Maybe have a staff?
But, I mean, the idea that he wants to do with this is he wants to get all the puzzle designs done in the game jam. That way, then, it's just a question of implementing the quest at a later date.
Well, I mean, I'm happy for you, Shane, and I feel very, very, very sorry for myself.
I knew talking about it would eventually make something happen. Just if you know, granted, I don't even know if any of these people have heard any of this, but just the fact we've been talking about it a lot gets it back into the public sphere.
I can't even believe it. Like, I know you guys, you know, like, I mean, it's Clan Quest, right? But I can't even believe, like, questers like that quest line.
Oh, they're some of the most favorite. Quests like Elemental Workshop and You Are It are quintessential quests that we like.
Is it because it's, like, mysterious? We still don't.
Yes.
Mysterious. You don't know what the story is.
You don't know where it's going to go, and there's still lore to uncover behind it.
Yeah, I mean, that. Look, I like the story. And puzzles. Like, it is neat, but.
And puzzles.
Yeah, the puzzles I did not like at all. So I was fine until we got the 3, and then that sliding puzzle, it just did me in. I mean, I was over it. I was done.
All right. So, aside from the player-owned lake and Elemental Workshop 5 through 7 being designed, Mod Aerator then came to the stream talking about Golden Clue Scrolls. And the idea behind this is to bring in another wow moment into the game. And the idea behind a golden clue scroll is that you'll be able to get a guaranteed rare item from that clue scroll. So that'll be something like a third age item, a second age item, a die, or something else that's stupid rare like that. And to situate everyone about this, these clue scrolls will be very, very rare. And that's the sense that was conveyed on live stream with this, is that they're going to be effectively stupid rare on this. And, you know, one of the other things with this is that it's going to be not as rare as a Hazelmere's, but more rare than Orlando Smith's hat, which, you know, itself is pretty rare.
I'd be fine if it was as rare as the Hazelmere's. I don't do clues and stuff, but that is something that has been a steady market for a really, really long time, and I wouldn't want that to get shaken up too much, you know, with dyes and stuff like that, you know.
No, and you know, I think they got this all covered and well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just have to hope and believe that, you know, Mod Timbo is on top of it and he ain't going to let something go through that.
That shouldn't.
Yeah, that shouldn't. And, I mean, I think as long as they err on the side of more rare rather than, you know, like you can always make it a little less rare, but it's hard to make it more rare because if you have a bunch of them drop in game all of a sudden, like, that's bad. So I like what they did with the Hazelmeres, you know what I mean? Like, it was really, really, really rare, but it ended up being a little too much. If I toned it down just a tiny bit, I think that's the way you go.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, every clue scroll that you get will have a chance to upgrade to a golden clue. It'll start off being super rare and easy and get a little bit less rare as the rarity of clue scroll gets up. And they said it's aimed to be that 99% of the player base will never experience a golden clue scroll. So they're bringing in silver clue scrolls in instead that are going to be less OP than golden clue scrolls, but will give one extra roll on the clue scroll drop table. So they just have another slot that you can get stuff from. And, you know, these will be something that you're going to see fairly often with this. They're not going to be, you know, as common as clues are right now, but they're going to be still something to strive for with this.
Yeah, I thought that stuff was a little confusing of how that all, like how they morph into the other things. Like, I didn't quite understand all of that.
Yeah, and I mean, this is still, you know, in the, I guess it's implemented, but I mean, we haven't received all the full details on it. But, you know, I think that it will work at the end because it's just a question of, you know, effectively subbing out one of the clue scrolls on there. So it's not something I'm personally worried about. And Orlando Smith's hat will work on the golden clue scrolls, which means that when worn, it gives a small chance for the treasure trail reward casket to give another casket of a lower tier. So that potentially means with a golden clue scroll, you could get a master casket.
Huh.
Yeah. And same thing for a silver clue scroll.
Yeah, all you have to do is acquire a
Orlando Smith's hat, yeah. Yeah.
No big deal.
No big deal at all. All right. Next up was Mod Osborne, Mod Raven, Mod Ryan, and Mod Camel. These guys are working on the Araxer quest. They wanted this to be out in time for Halloween, but it won't be. It'll be out probably at some point in November, they think. And it aims to bring the lore to Araxer. The design is complete, dialogue's complete, and it uses Castle Draken, and it stretches back to the First Age in terms of the lore that it talks about.
That's super cool. I'm really glad Mod Osborne has been more visible.
Yeah, he was like, on this live stream this week as well.
Yeah, he helps, I think. I mean, that's just my humble opinion, but I don't know. I think he's helpful.
He's becoming the face of the new content. So, next up, Mod Shogun, Ripper Demon Pet. For those who absolutely love fighting Ripper Demons, that's not me. I fought a few of those, and that was the end of that story for me. But this pet will be available by the way that all the other Slayer pets in game can be dropped. It'll be a drop rate of 1 out of 30,000 and 1 out of 1,000 from Elite Ripper Demons, which is absolutely absurd. I don't know who's going to fight that many Ripper Demons, but for those of you guys out there, congratulations.
You know, people that can do them and have them down don't seem to mind, but oh, man.
They're hard.
I'll never own it. Yeah, they're very difficult. I mean, people, like I said, people that have it down, they're fine with it, but yeah. Ugh.
It'll also be able to, of course, override all the other pets, so it has attack animations and whatnot with it, too.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Mod Shogun's also working on improving elite NPCs in terms of vastly increasing the XP they give and the drops that they give. Drops will come from a specific elite monster table, and then they'll also have a 100% chance to get a drop from the rare drop table as well. They're in the design
prototype
phase.
They're just now figuring that out?
Yeah. Yeah.
How long have we had these now?
Years.
Years, and they've never been worth it. Like, They've just never really been worth the hassle of fighting them.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad they're making some changes. That's good.
Because it's just like yawn whenever you see one of those elite abyssal demons, for example.
Yeah, well, for sure. Yeah.
Stone spirits, the work is done on stone spirits in terms of the actual dev work. They're going to put out a dev blog on this hopefully next week and then ship the update. That came out of nowhere.
Spirits.
That came out of nowhere, didn't it?
What fix are they doing with that?
I don't know. We will find out soon.
Boy.
We know they've been useless ever since the MNS rework.
Well, they didn't come until then.
Yeah.
So they have basically been useless their whole existence. Their whole life has been useless.
I hope they go something to the effect that we talked about where they factor into making salvage and whatnot.
Yeah. I
or
would hope
amping
so.
Up smithing in some way.
Yeah. Smithing is still really slow, dude. I like it better. I still stand behind everything they did with the smithing, but it is much slower. Like, that is a thing. That is real.
All right. Then they took a bit of a brief detour and they talked about the bounty board, and this is a new thing that they brought in, and they said there's certain things that come from social media or just things in general that can benefit the game that they want to work on. And, you know, they just didn't have the time and the schedule to work on them. So devs can ultimately have a choice of working on bounty projects rather than their personal passion projects. And the goal of this is to get more updates to the players that they want. And in return for doing one of these projects on the bounty board, the devs will get something in return internally. And Elemental Workshop was one of those ones on the bounty board too.
Hmm.
So Mod Osborne wants it done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure he does. It's a quest. He's a quester guy. Like, you know, yeah, that makes sense. Can we get the construction rework on the bounty board? I'll put a reward up, like wanted construction rework.
And see, this is good because it allows us and other community members to push for certain updates. And if it generates enough talk behind it and we keep talking about it, it will probably make its way to the bounty board. And if something does make its way to the bounty board, it has a higher chance of being picked up and brought in as an update.
Yeah.
So this is a good system. I'm very pleased with that. Mod Days made an update to skill pets that will now show the drop or the amount of XP you had or the kill count when you get them. That's going to be infuriating to watch.
When you get them?
Yeah.
See, that's cool. I love that.
So you're gonna see that my skill peer on the other account got the farming skill pet at 97 farming, if that was in place.
I guess you have to start another account now.
But then you're going to also have people who are, you know, north of many hundreds of millions of XP dry before getting it. So that's going to be time we shed a tear.
Yes.
And, of course, Mod Shawnee working on skilling offhands. But he's also extended the legendary. He's also changed the way legendary pet beast of burden features are extended. Boy, that's a mouthful.
What does that mean?
Previously, you would have to use the pouch on the legendary pet. Now you can just click it from within your inventory. And it will extend the time on it.
Oh, sweet. Oh, that's great. That's cool. Good deal.
Also, he brought in a broadcast for when people accept the Virago challenge, because at times when you're fighting Virago, Virago will issue a challenge and you don't know if your teammates have accepted it. So that's a bit of a QOL update. Then skilling offhands, which we talked about at length last week, which, I mean, is one of the updates of any of these on here, I hope make it in. I hope these make it into game more so than Elemental Workshop, mind you, just because of how important they are. So all of these skilling offhands are going to be able to be augmented. So what this will mean is that invention will now work across skills that don't have invention already. So just a bit of a brief rundown from last week. The sacrifice offhand will work with the breakdown, rapid, and tinker perks, and you lose 1% of your max health when gathering and fishing, woodcutting, mining, or hunter, or if smithing progress is doubled when you're using it. You also gain a 1% chance increase to divination, thieving, fishing, woodcutting, and hunter chances when doing it, and a 1% damage increase when mining, and a 1% chance to double smithing progress. And these are, of course, additives. So, you know, double smithing progress, double damage when mining every time you lose your health. That's going to be pretty swell, I think. Elemental, you turn into one of the four elementals for 40 seconds. Air, everything gathered or produced is done instantly. That's going to be a big one for mining.
Yeah.
Earth, bind yourself but gain 10% more XP. Water, don't lose prayer, summoning, or divine charges while it's active. And fire, everything gathered or produced will be destroyed for more XP. Now, my concern with this is that you're not going to get to pick which one activates. And you definitely don't want to, I guess, destroy that Animica when you're mining it.
Well, it depends on what the XP boost is.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see on that.
Because, see, it almost feels like it's going to be one of those choices like what you have with the Ram Hammer. Are you going to get more in the way of resources, or are you going to get more in the way of
XP? Yeah, that would be good if you could choose, definitely.
Yeah, if you could choose, that would be better. But, like, I guess where we're at now is you're just going to get more XP if that activates, right?
Yeah. And after the podcast last week, Shawnee, or I guess Sirion, if you want to go continue with the meme from last week, posted an update in his Discord that all of the buff icons are done. Offhand degrading is done. The sacrifice and elemental offhands are finished. The rapid breakdown perks now work for skilling offhands across most skilling activities. Item XP works across most skilling activities on the offhand only. We already talked about sacrifice takes 1% of your XP per hit. Every 10% of missing HP boosts gathering by 1% and mining by plus 1 damage, and smithing's double progress chance by 1%. So that all stacks together. So if you lose, you know, 50% of your HP, you're going to be gaining 5% plus 5 mining damage, you know, and have a 5% chance to double smithing progress. And I don't think we can underscore how groundbreaking this is, the fact that there's now this choice.
I cannot wait for, like, the first week that the stuff comes out. Just the skilling community is going to be just running numbers and testing, and it's going to be cool. This is going to be, like, our equivalent to, like, a new boss.
Yeah.
You know, where people are trying to figure it out. It's going to be cool. I don't claim to be someone that can figure it out, but I can't wait until it is figured out. That way I can set everything up the best way possible.
Yeah. Let me see if I can find anything on the elemental randomness, because that's something that is very concerning on this one for me. Also, interesting thing about this, the destruction one, when it procs, gives you a chance of destroying the item. When an item gathered or produced is destroyed, you get more XP, and there's also a chance to low elk the item.
That's cool. See, I would think that would be great for, like, a woodcutting or...
Yeah, that would be really good for woodcutting. Now, here's the thing. Here it is. He posted a screenshot and he said, I wanted to cook, except he got the wrong elemental. He got the water elemental. Which, with that, you didn't lose prayer summoning points or divine charges, which makes no sense. So it is going to be random. It is going to be random.
That might be the least coveted one.
I think the fire one's going to be the least coveted, personally.
Well, I mean, but, like, as for all the offhands, don't know if the elemental one is going to be people go for.
Apparently, it's been set up right now that destroying it looks like it will give for a sailfish 2100 XP. This is, of course, preliminary. 2100 XP when it got destroyed. Okay, maybe the fire one will make sense. Especially if you're just going for pure XP.
Well, yeah, and we kind of have that, like, think about what's the perk that you put it on your tinder box if you're doing bonfire, throw the whole inventory.
Yeah.
I mean, think, you know, I wonder if it would work with that. That'd be interesting.
Someone asked about making elder overloads and if the fire one procs. He said skilling should be about paying attention as well. So if that procs, ouch. So that's right. That's the way it's intended to be.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I'm not sure. I guess it's your choice if you put it on there, but skiller is worrying about dying. Probably not going to go well.
Yeah, I agree. And also, the Sliskay's endgame set that you get from the end of that quest will be augmented.
Yes. Oh, that's cool. That yeah.
It's going to be augmentable.
I still have it and still use it.
Yeah, I should be using it. I should be. I don't.
Yeah, you should have had it out there with your Jadinko hunting there, buddy.
Oh. What does it give me for Hunter?
I think it helps set the. It's something to do with the traps.
Let me see that. Sliskay's endgame set. See, I use it when I'm farming because it makes sense to use it. Because if herbs die, you actually get something from it, right?
Oh, that I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Oh, I should have that with me when I'm farming too. I'll have to add that to my preset.
Yeah, definitely. So Sliskay's endgame rewards, you get the Hunter's Catalyst Fragment, which resets several hunter traps if they fail to catch any prey.
That's
the Runecrafter's one has the degradation rate of runecrafting pouches, and the farming one allows dead herbs to be picked for farming XP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
And you can combine them all into one big combined catalyst fragment as well. For anybody
didn't realize that either. Jeez.
Yeah.
Where have I been?
I don't know.
I think when I got done with that quest, I was just like, we're done. Okay, great. Yay. I mean, I knew the hunter part because that's the only time I've really used it, but I didn't realize the farming or that you could combine them.
Oh, that could have made my Jadinko hunting so much easier. It resets marmoset traps.
Yeah, that probably would have helped. Well, now you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good to know. And that was it for the live stream this week. I don't know why I forgot about that.
Because we tried to put that out of our mind when we got through it. It was rough.
There's also the Ring of Whispers that gives a +3% or +3 boost to gathering skills, which I knew about that one.
Yeah.
And the Necklace of Shadows stops familiars draining summoning points after they've initially been summoned. And there is a set effect called Manifested Knowledge that will... when training, give you a random chance to spawn a wisp near the players every 4 minutes and last for 1 minute before disappearing, and it'll give you XP.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying, though. But yes.
Why is it annoying?
It's just like a Saren thing. It's not very much XP.
All right, fair enough. Oh, sorry, it provides bonus XP.
Makes it a little bit better because at least if you got your portable fix, you can cash it in for something that you want later. But it's kind of hard though because like you typically use them while you're gathering, but if you're gathering, you're probably not at 100% attention.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
You mess them a lot. You know what I mean?
All right. Well, let's move on to our questions. But before we do that, I just want to thank our wonderful Patreon supporters for the week. There are a lot of you to thank this week, so thank you very much. In particular, Arvids L, Brock H, Cass, a newcomer, Christian S, welcome, Darren L, Diana, Jason S, Kyle, Logan H, Rippeth, Sam W, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you, all of you, for your support of RSBNB Update. It truly does mean the world to us. And if you want to find out more about our Patreon service, you can go to patreon.com/RSBNB. There, for as little as $1 a month, you get access to our entire back catalog of monthly bits. You get it mentioned in the show notes. You get early access to the show notes. And you get to vote for topics that we're going to be featuring on the monthly bit. This month, we have the choices of a look at RuneScape's microtransactions, a look at old school, or an interview with a professional game developer, a.k.a. Sirion. So all of that is available at the $1 tier. If you want to go up to $3, you get a special VIP rank on Discord and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out every week, including access to the clips that we use for the clip show at the end of the year. There are some definite good ones in last week's show for anybody who wants to take part in that. And what we're doing with this, of course, we got our monthly bit. Then we have our roundtable, which we're doing this weekend. And should we reach $99 a month, we'll be doing movie night in the RSBNB Discord with Tannis and myself. So that's, of course, what we're going for. So if this at all interests you, I just want to say thank you to us for providing the show. Visit patreon.com/RSBNB. And once again, we say thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. It truly does mean the world to us, your support.
Thanks, guys.
All righty. So first up, we have an audio question from the RR Man.
Hey, hey, it's the RR Man here. How's it going? Wow, that was one heck of a Reddit post. And if you haven't talked about it already, I'm sure you may mention it now. Very impressive, and hello to all the new listeners out there. Quick plug for Patreon, full stop. For anyone out there who's never considered it, even putting in a dollar to a Patreon really does matter. Any Patreon, not just the RSBNB one, which I would advise you should do. But yeah, a dollar doesn't seem like much, but every dollar added to give it adds up. So think about that. Now, with Archaeology coming out next year, I want to ask you what you guys want to be digging up. What items from the RuneScape lore, which you know I'm not very good at, but what things would you like to see as the artifacts or items that you can make during the skill? Things like, I don't know, second age armor, third age armor, stuff like that. As I said, not an expert. I want to know what you guys want to see. Peace out.
All right. Yeah, so I think we can actually, I'm going to mention the Reddit post in the next question, Tycho's question, because he addresses it head on. But, I mean, if any new listeners are out there listening, of course, welcome. So, Archaeology, what do you want to be digging up?
Holy shit, I just got to walk a pet. Okay.
What? What did you get?
I just got a pet, dude. Wallace?
Who's that?
I must be defense, I'm guessing.
Okay.
Sorry, dude. I was like...
Well, I mean, it's okay to be distracted by a skill pet drop.
Yeah, like, oh, cool. Wow.
All right. Well, while you're composing yourself, I'll say that I'd like to learn more about all the elder artifacts. And, you know, granted, we have seen some of the elder artifacts, but in particular, there are a few that we haven't seen. The Codex, the Template, and the Hammer. And, you know, there's other ones as well that we could learn a little bit more about. For instance, there's the blade, Guthix's sword, that was initially shattered. It would be very fun to learn a bit more about that, I think. And, of course, you know, I think we know the most about the Stone of Jazz and the Needle, right? But... I think that there's these three elder artifacts that we really don't know that much about. And, Given the way archaeology is meant to lean into the past, I think it'd be fun to look at some of these elder artifacts.
Yeah.
That'd be my bet. Failing that, I'd like to see extensions of the making and meeting history quests, which obviously were ad hoc at the time, but I think could be kind of rejiggered if they were to have a sequel to kind of tie into archaeology and maybe some of these elder artifacts.
Oh, that'd be cool. Like some of the artifacts we interacted with in the past and like we find them now, you know what I mean? Like the stuff in the house or something. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
And, you know, maybe I think another fun thing would be to – I think they want to go this way. And the reason that I say this is because the survey had a very heavy tilt towards asking, hey, would you like to explore the human kingdoms, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, you know, kind of to the same way that The World Wakes was our foothold into the Sixth Age, what if archaeology is our foothold into exploring the human kingdoms? Aside from the anachrony aspect, which I think is going to be no doubt happening when we get the Orthon dig site later next year. So I think human kingdoms are another option as well. So that's what I'd like to see. But based on where we're going, I think we can also learn a lot about the Icene because there is that one dig site in the Icene area as well. And to me, that one is going to be the most interesting one. So,
yes, that actually plays into something I'm hoping to cover.
Oh, what's that?
Well, that – okay. So I kind of have two answers.
Okay.
One is like my serious answer, which is the Icene stuff. I want to know more about how Theridomen attained godhood. So I'd love to find more clues to tell that story, artifacts and stuff, and I'd also like to uncover Saren's panties.
What?
Saren's panties.
What do you mean by that?
I'm assuming she probably wears panties. Or maybe she don't. But if she does...
I don't think a god made of crystal needs that.
Hmm.
But that's just me. That's just me. I have to wonder if that answer was planted.
No. No, actually not.
Okay. Fair enough.
Does that sound like something I would say, Shane?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, you think Saren. I mean, Saren.
Okay.
She's kind of cool. Kind of like her.
Yeah, and you know, we learned a lot about her in Children of Ma, being the light form of Zaros. So.
Yeah, I mean, they could have made her look more attractive. I'm not sure about the whole alien type of vibe thing they got going on there. But
well, you got to remember that Saren and Zaros are two gods that were created as abstract objects.
Yeah, but he didn't.
And they can change their form, right?
Oh, yeah, they can. There you go.
They're not locked into their form because they're at tier 2 godhood, which allows them to effectively shapeshift into whatever they need to be. And that's how the constantly changing appearance of Zaros has gone from the mist to what we saw in the Sixth Age. And Saren put herself in the crystal format to be amenable to the elves.
No wonder Guthix was all up on that. She could just change into whatever he felt like that day.
All right, moving on. Thank you, RR Man, for that question. I will be addressing the Reddit part of your question right now and Tycho's question. So this is from Tycho. It says, Dear RSBNB, it's been a while, but after 11 very silent weeks from Jagex, the updates seem to have exploded, yet they have not. We are still lacking updates, yet I see people run back and forth like never before, stacking up herbs for 120 herb lore. People are making herb runs for once, mass murdering of absolute units for their eggs, and the player-owned farm getting popular again after its nerf. RuneScape is filled with life again. Osborne commented on the stream that he didn't want this long lack of updates to happen again. However, wasn't the reveals at RuneFest a huge boom that baffled us all, especially you, Shane? And I think we can all agree that I don't think any of us were expecting what we saw at RuneFest, right?
No.
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 Or more importantly, should Jagex have revealed some of the updates during these silent weeks to build expectation and divert frustration over the lack of updates? I remember a community that was patient with the mining and smithing rework, both because they openly showed 46 pages of fixes that had to get done before the release, but also because it was presented in a way that made players patient, knowing the wait was well worth the reward. Okay, so let's handle this side. I think the Epic Game Jam and the changes that have been made to the episodic content team are going to fix the problems going forward. Hence the number of quests that we can see starting to be prototyped and eventually work their way into development in the bounty board. So I think that going forward into 2020, we won't have a problem with this lack of updates. That's part one. But part two, looking at the past, I don't know. I don't know. You can tell me how you feel about this, but I feel we wouldn't have had as big of a bang if they would have come out on a live stream, say at the beginning of September, and said that farming is going to 120 and Herblore is going to 120. And you wouldn't have the amount of shock and surprise about it.
Well, I would much rather they had traded the 120 announcements for the archaeology one.
Oh, you mean when they did it at the end of that live stream?
Yeah.
Where they said, we're announcing a new skill.
Yeah, I think that would have been a bigger pop, better save for RuneFest.
Right, but the problem is that that was mid-September already. And if you were going to do something like that, you should have done it at the start of September or the middle of August.
Yeah, I mean, let's not bury the lead there. There was a reason they did that. It wasn't.
There was an attempt to change the channel.
Yes.
And, you know, quite honestly, the channel should have been turned the first or second week of August.
Yeah, they knew that this was only going to get worse. Like, it wasn't letting up. People weren't letting it go. So,
and you know, this is why I was such a fan of the Mod JD livestream that he did probably about a month ago at this point, is that it was frank and to the point, and it was delivering information. It was information that players asked for, but yet it was delivered in a way that had a certain sizzle to it. And that's not to say what Mod Shawnee does is bad or the regular live streams are bad. We've been very clear here in the past that we like the Mod Shawnee live streams. Yes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And there is a time and a place where you need to effectively bring the sizzle forward. And that should have been what was happening in August and September. Whether that was Mod Osborne going out on these live streams and, you know, answering questions about updates that might be coming forward. And, you know, they could have done that with 120 farming and Herblore. You're probably right. But if you look back at the RuneFest live stream and you hear the announcements there, if you didn't announce that, or if you didn't announce that at RuneFest, you wouldn't have had the big part of the RuneScape keynote.
Well, right, but you would have had... Well, I mean, you still would have, right? You're just interchanging the archaeology announcement for
right,
the
right.
20s. But, I mean, they're both there.
But the thing is, people would have known it was coming, and you wouldn't have had this huge build-up with Mod Raven coming out of the stream on stage announcing a new player-owned farm, and then 120 farming, 120 Herblore, back-to-back. Just, you know, completely out
I mean,
of
yeah, field. It's... I still think you would have had Mod... You still would have had Mod Raven. You would have had all that set up.
Yes, just, but it wouldn't have popped.
Right, but archaeology didn't pop in the way that it should have either. Like,
I think that's going to happen in January.
Yeah, I think there would have been a bigger pop with archaeology had it been announced at RuneFest. Everything at RuneFest was set up for archaeology. That's what I was saying ahead of time. I'm like, look at how they're the theme. Look at all the, you know, like they're setting it up for archaeology. So, but I think the bigger issue really is something that, man, I go back and forth on, because when you save all of your big announcements like that for RuneFest, it makes RuneFest feel special. It makes it feel like it generates the hype. It reminds me of like what the older RuneFest were always like. It always made me excited.
And they needed to do that this year.
But at the same time, I think they could have saved themselves a lot of trouble had they been a little more forthcoming with some of these updates. Because, and the reason I say that was it was so quiet. They'd kept everything for this one weekend. And meanwhile, the ship was on fire. We got a fire, guys.
They kept announcements like, back. They've been very clear that no content has been delayed for RuneFest.
Right. Oh, the announcements. But, you know, I think when it comes to the average player just listening to the news, you know, the RuneScape news of the week or the day or what have you, those announcements, I mean, no, they're not content, but it kind of gives you something that you're to talk about and something to look forward to. It would have been a much better discussion to have than some of the other discussions we had to have pertaining to less pleasant things, you know? So it's like, what do you do at RuneFest? Like, should RuneFest be focused more for the social aspects of it and the interactions and the coming together part as players, or should it be this big major hype producing, you know, event for the year?
I lead to the second one because with the second one, you know, we're still going off the gas from that here.
We are. And the only reason that I kind of go back and forth is because I feel like that drought that we had could have been somewhat negated with a few of these announcements. You know, it's just, we just had such a long period of time of, you know, it was either MTX or nerfs. It was just one thing after another where, you know, a little bit of good news, I think, really could have helped the situation with that.
It all comes down to messaging. And this entire time you've been talking about this, I've been trying to think of something that has come out in August and September that could have been retailored to have been talked about and drawn the discussion away, and I can't come up with anything.
Yeah, because they didn't.
People don't like to hear this. People don't like to hear this. But in this day and age, you need to drive a news cycle in order to get good PR, especially with social media. That's the way it has to be.
And you can't, let stuff fester.
And if you're not driving that news cycle and you're letting other people drive that news cycle, you are losing.
Well, and it's going to continue to fester. Mm-hmm. It's going to continue to fester. And look, granted, there's legitimate arguments with that. And there's legitimate discussions to be making. And I think there's a place to do that. But it just drug on and on and on and on and on. You know what I mean? And so it had a detrimental effect.
Okay, here's what I would have done. Here's what I would have done. And, you know, obviously this would require many talking heads to agree on this, and you would have had to do this in September, and you would have had to move real quickly on it, and I don't know if you're able to move real quickly on it. I would have got together the heads of social, so Mod JD, I would have got together the heads of monetization, whoever that is that handles the Treasure Hunter side, and I would have got Mod Osborne all here together, and I would have said, okay, people are complaining about this, people are talking about this, people want some kind of statement on this. Let's do this. Let's go out to the players and say, hey, you guys don't like this, but let's show them a picture of what it could look like if we really did want to effectively double down on microtransactions so that we were bringing in peak profit. What would those things look like? And we could say, we don't want to do this, and we're not going to do this. And what you would do is you would do a live stream. You would promote it heavily in all the different places, and you would get it to the point that it was very graphical, to the point that the RuneFest live keynote was very graphical. You would put big red X's through the things that you didn't like, showing how what we're doing right now is, you know, not the peak microtransactions, because you and I both know if they wanted to, they could be running smoldering lamps and volcanic lamps every other week if they really wanted to.
That's true.
They could.
Yeah, no, I think the only thing, see, I think that would have just incited
right.
more.
But then you also get the content team on there and said, okay, you guys don't like that. We're going to try Rune Pass again, and you guys can have a choice. We can do it the way we've been doing it, or we can have a two-week suspension on microtransactions, try Rune Pass again with some kind of cosmetic set. And, you know, granted, this requires there to be some kind of cosmetic set to release. I don't know if there was. And content team, what are you guys doing to make things better? You would have come out with Mod Osborne. You would have had a live Q&A with him about the drought of content and how that's going to be fixed going forward. And you would showcase some of the updates that are coming forward. You probably wouldn't want to tease archaeology or 120 farming, but you could go into other things about, say, for example, the bounty board, for example.
That, I mean, that would be good. I don't think you're going to get the – like, to me, that's like – that's the stick approach, right? I mean, that's
no,
the like the beat you over.
No, it's not.
Kind
because,
of a stick
because
approach.
I'm not talking about any kind of live stream where you have people sitting on the couches. There is in the Jagex atrium an area where they can give presentations that can easily hold upwards of 300 people. You get people in there. You get people in there, and you have people, of course, giving their presentations on stage, and. You know, this is going to sound a bit shallow for saying it, but you've talked to pretty much everybody who has come in on a studio tour in the last 18 months to Jagex, because they do these things. And you fly them all in, and you get people who are going to be on both sides of the equation, and you get the entire room cheering, and you live stream that to Twitch, you live stream that to Twitter, you live stream that to Reddit. You do this the second week of September, and that changes the channel.
Right. I don't think it's a good look for them to say, this is what we could do. So get off our ass, because it could be a lot worse. What I would do with that is you can do the same thing, Shane, like the exact same thing by using other companies as models. Be like, look at what EA is doing. Now we could take it to that level, but we don't want to do that as a company, and as that
you get into various things like corporate libel doing that.
And but I think it would turn people off if they thought it was like, you know, if you're saying, hey, we could make it worse. You know, I don't think that comes off good. Like, I mean,
okay, don't say we could make it worse. Then just say this is the baseline of where we're at in 16, 17, 18 with microtransactions and show it going down. Because, you know, if you look at the financial reports, microtransaction revenue has gone down over the last couple of years. And
well,
say that we are making progress to ramping down microtransactions. There's other things we could try, like Rune Pass.
You know, I think people are generally reasonable, right? I think you can come out, you can be honest and have a conversation with the community. And have a back and forth. You know, one thing that I try not to do is I try to always have worked out at least an idea of a solution before you go tearing something down. And so, like, I feel like they could have come out and they can say, hey, we have these marks that we have to meet financially. That's what we have to do. Like, we have to make these certain marks. Sure, we'd love to go over them, but we have to make these marks. Now, we know you don't like the randomness in Treasure Hunter. What are some of your suggestions? Solicit that feedback and work together to see. Now, granted, look, you're going to have a large percentage that's like, we don't want any of it. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. But I think a lot of other people would say, look, okay, they do need to hit their marks. We understand that. let's work together. Maybe that is a rune pass model. Maybe that's, you know, some other model. And you could do the same thing like what you're talking about, get them all in a room, and you're going to have a big pop when people start, you know, collaborating. And,
you know,
and now people have a sense of ownership over right. it as well.
And see, the thing is, I'm not even concerned if this would net any actual benefits for it. The main thing you got to do is change the channel.
Yeah.
Because, well, I mean, asking players for feedback on monetization isn't something a company should do. But, I mean, if you really wanted to change the channel, asking players about it would be the Jagex thing to do. In terms of, you know, having what would be the equivalent of an inquiry in government, where you hear from all stakeholders, including the players, including the company people, including game industry experts, including legal, that kind of thing. That would be an unprecedented thing to do. And with the knowledge that, you know, it's going forward, there's going to be the community champions who are going to keep talking about it. That would change the channel of not doing anything. And it would effectively have given them something to talk about. But the downside about doing this, what you and I are talking about here, do you realize what that would be?
No. What's that?
The biggest story of the year would be about RuneScape's microtransactions.
But it could be the biggest story of how Jagex is leading the charge and changing the current dynamic in microtransactions by working with their players. The only company in the whole world that is doing that, they're doing that. So, yeah, it could be that story, but you could make it one hell of a good story.
And you would need the community spin doctors to do it, as well as the video game reporting industry
right,
as
but,
well.
But if the community together helps to come up with whatever the solution is going to be, we're all going to have a sense of ownership in that. And we're going to want that to succeed. And we can't, now we can't blame a nameless, faceless corporation. We'll say, hey, we have part of this too.
Yeah.
We have skin in the game too. I don't know. I'm an inclusive type person. You know what I mean? I'm always trying to figure out a way to get people a seat at the table. But could you imagine that? Could you imagine if Jagex took the headlines by saying, "Hey, we know the current model in the gaming industry is microtransactions and milk the shit out of the players as much as you can and make it random and make it loot boxes. Worth doing something different. We're going to work with our community." Like, it would just, it could light a fire, dude. Like, I don't know. I guess that's where I'm at on it.
Yeah, and I mean, it would be a huge risk to take, too, in that I don't know if the people who talk about RuneScape would pick it up enough and not find it cynical in terms of that. Like, I'm speaking of the inner community.
Yeah.
Granted, the video game industry would pick it up, but the main focus here has to be the inner community. The core community, and my question is, would they find it cynical? And if they found it cynical, it might not be a wise idea to do. And aside from this thing of, you know, blowing the gates open, you know, just making a huge splash, I don't know of any other way they could have changed the channel in that time period.
Look, I mean, you might be right. I'm not going to lie. It's idealistic. And sometimes I can have a tendency of being a little naive when it comes to that, but I still feel like people, if they felt they had a, you know, an impact, a voice that, you know, they'd be serious about it. But I don't know. I mean, you know, you're always going to have a tiny percentage that's going to be cynical, and you can't move them. You know, it's like an election, you know, people have their, it's like a Trump thing. He's got his hardcore 30%. It does not matter. Nothing matters. Those people, it does not matter. But there's 70% out there that are reasonable. and would be willing to listen.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. I mean,
and see the thing that I want to underscore with this, it's not, you know, necessarily a case of trying to solve this with a couple of quick actions. It's just a question of would have been, can we talk about something else and can we drive the discussion rather than letting the community drive the discussion? And in that way, maybe all that would have been needed would have been a bit of transparency.
Yeah, well, it goes back to what we talk about on this show, I mean, week after week after week, and it's the messaging, it's the communication, you know, it's all those things that, you know, I think we can say objectively Jagex does struggle with, and just need to hire us sometime. No, I'm kidding. But I mean, they do struggle with that, and that's what we're talking about here, with like, What was the messaging with this? Could they have done something different? Could it have been a better job? And I absolutely think yes. You know, it could have been, rather that is like going more your route or more my route. Either way, it would have been better than I think what was done. You know, so.
All right, let's move on into the next part then. So. Focusing on this, there is also some activity in RSBNB's YouTube channel from an unexpected source. Reddit, can we expect some kind of activity or presence of the podcast in this area in the future, even if it is a small one? As a wise Sarah Dominist once said, the light is strongest in the darkest of places.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, there's still a very simple answer to this one, is that, you know, I have my sources the way I do things around here on the show. I am overjoyed of anybody who wants to listen to us. But I mean, if there is something that does draw our attention or that should warrant attention on Reddit from the both of us, the simplest way of doing that is to have our content shared there, whether it be a full episode or the nibbles that come out in the middle of the week. There we go. That's
Oh yeah.
I mean we saw the thread and we both jumped on and we both said hello and we went to go say hi and, you know, how are things doing and whatnot, right?
Oh, so. it really made me feel good about what we do. It was something I didn't expect, because a lot of times you don't see a lot of positive stories.
That was indeed surprising. And it was, you know, in general, net positive. The actual post was actually gilded too, which was amazing. Credit to Raji for posting that. For those who don't know, Raji, the guy who posted that, was one of our listeners and bought correspondence from years ago when we had the bot problems in RS2, as it was then, and we had constant chat with him about what was actually happening there. So he's a friend of the pod. He has been around and still listens to it. So
see, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I look, I think I use Reddit like a lot of people do, which is to kind of look around, kind of try to gauge what the feelings are out there. But I also think that there's a large group of people that that look at it but aren't necessarily posting on it.
Yes.
And I think that's important to remember that, you know, sometimes and the same thing used to happen like in the RuneScape forums, right? Like it would be like really loud, really angry people that would make really long posts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they would get most of the attention, but everybody would go there to try to like learn and have be informed and everything. So, I thought it was cool. I was totally, totally taken by surprise, and I hope we continue to, keep talking truth to power.
Yeah. And, right. You know, one thing I take away from this and actually confirms this, and I said this to you guys, the producers, and I don't know if you guys believe me on this. I said that there's a silent majority effect out there in the RuneScape community. There is a majority of people who are okay with the way things are going, who are fine with the current state of affairs, and are not shit disturbers as often is generated in terms of most of the top content on the RuneScape subreddit. And this just proves that there is indeed a silent majority out there, even just there, as you said, people who are just reading but might not be making most of the noise, who, when something good does come along, will elevate it accordingly.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's not to discount, like, when things go wrong. Like, sometimes things, I mean, look at the last, you know, however long, sometimes things went wrong, and, you know, and we address that, you know, I think, like the sigils is a good example of that, right? We address what the issues were with the sigils. You know, but at the same time, we try not to just attack, you know, like it's, I think we try to be pretty even tempered about it. Of course, Shane is much more even tempered than I am. I usually have to have a sit down, calm down session with Shane before showtime. But you should be a therapist, Shane.
No, I don't want to do that.
RuneScape therapy. There you go.
Speaking of other things that can be extended from the RSBNB name, there's a rumor going on that RSBNB is an abbreviation of the RuneScape Bed and Breakfast. Wouldn't it be humorous to see Shane and his crew operate a small hotel in the Canadian wilderness? Tanis at the service desk, Sirion as the handsome butler, Earth as the cleaning lady, and Dave would be the cook. And yes, Tyka would like to be hired as the local wildlife guide. Imagine the possibilities. Anyways, where does the podcast name come from? And more importantly, why is the name better than RuneScape Bed and Breakfast? Well, RSBNB Update, of course, refers to the RSBNB website, which stands for RuneScape Bits and Bytes, which when we made the site in 2004, we thought, oh, this sounds neat. This is something that is effectively named after what you see in some places, like a Bits and Bytes cafe. So we just took the name Bits and Bytes, because anytime you're dealing with something computer-related, people often first think of Bits and Bytes. So that's what we went with. And as a result of that, you know, we have a track record of being the most innovative RuneScape fan site out there. We were the first with dynamically updating calculators. We were the first to bring skill signatures to market, even though others will say so otherwise. We were the first with goal signatures. And, you know, I think these have faded less and less over time as more people have started to focus on social media rather than forums for interacting. And all you need to do is look at that the largest RuneScape community, Zybez, shut down 2 years ago. So granted, yes, we still keep things around, but at the end of the day, when it comes to it, it was just something that we thought, Bits and Bytes Cafe, that we saw locally, and let's extend that to the fan site. RSBNB.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, it does make it hard for searching, because you can search for RSBNB, you can search for RuneScape, whatever's RuneScape calculators and RuneScape signatures, and we had to, you know, bake that into the pages where we were talking, because our name isn't something that would be as synonymous like RuneHQ or tip.it as it, you know, became to prominence, because you type RuneScape tips, you get tip.it back in the day at least, right? So it was a little bit difficult on that regard for handling that, but over time I think it's worked. And you know, I think if you search for RuneScape podcast, we're like something the first result amongst an aggregator or something to that effect, so we're happy with that. If you guys want to send your own questions in, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com, or you can leave them on Twitter @RSBNB. Yeah, we're on Twitter for anybody who wants to send questions in there. And we, of course, love talking about anything you guys send in, as evidenced by this week's wide-ranging and meandering questions segment.
Oh, Tycho's questions are never meandering. I'm still chuckling at the thought of Earth as the cleaning lady. That'd be great. I think we should make Tycho the grounds person, so he can do the trimming of the bushes.
Yeah, that would work.
Mowing, you know. Yeah, right. Yeah.
All right. So, tech news. Facebook's Libra Association is crumbling as Visa, MasterCard, Stripe, and others exit. And PayPal left 1 week before this was published. And for anybody wondering, Libra was Facebook's attempt to create a cryptocurrency that you would be able to use to purchase goods online and in the real world. And Facebook would be the primary wallet for it, so that, you know, hey, you're using Facebook everywhere you go now, even to make purchases. And they thought that the cryptocurrency might be the way to go. But Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, eBay, Stripe, Mercado Pago have all withdrawn their support from the Libra Association, which leaves Facebook with no one who's going to back this. A Visa spokesperson told The Verge that Visa has decided not to join the Libra Association at this time. We'll continue to evaluate, and our ultimate decision will be determined by a number of factors, including the association's ability to fully satisfy all regulatory expectations. And this leaves Libra with no major U.S. payment processor. So, you know, we talked about this. The first meeting happened this past week in Geneva for this. But any ideas that the Libra cryptocurrency will take off and become a shining standard that we'll all be paying with in 5 years, I think can be shot to dust with the huge withdrawals by people like Visa and MasterCard and PayPal, just to name a few.
Not to mention, it was a cryptocurrency.
Yeah. Which is still like very, very, very obtuse for many people.
Right. Yeah. No, it was. I mean, these companies, they don't want to be tied to Facebook's next screw up. And there will be a next screw up. They don't want no part of that.
No. No. So. And, you know, I think this was Facebook's attempt to, as I said in the other story, change the channel away from them always being criticized for privacy. Whereas if they can bring out something that says crypto and it can gain prominence, even if there's still going to be a ways to get into the wallets and see and provide these details to the various powers that be, so to speak, if Facebook could have got something like that, then lo and behold, that might change the channel for Facebook.
Well, yeah. I mean, just think. Like, last week we covered a story that, you know, governments want access to their encryption. Uh-huh. So now they would know every dollar that people had?
Oh, no. Yeah, you see, that's the thing.
You know what I'm saying? Right? That was a bad idea. It's not a good idea.
It is not a good idea. I mean, do you really want to have Facebook in charge of this? Is the question.
Yeah,
I think, you know, looking at the reasoning they've given, that, you know, we're not 100% sure on how the regulatory aspects would work is fair, but Visa, MasterCard, and to a lesser extent Stripe taking part in a cryptocurrency is a huge risk for them, and you can see why they wouldn't want to do that. So,
yeah.
I'm not going to shed any tears over this.
No, go retire, Mark. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, he should just retire and let someone else
just
take
retire.
Over the company, because the company could be so much more, but it's not.
Yeah, and you got more money than God at this point. I mean, seriously. What, you don't? You could never spend it all. Just go enjoy your life.
And speaking of privacy, in our next story, someone from Microsoft has said that the case for online privacy has reached a crisis point. Microsoft President Brad Smith wants antitrust laws to be updated for the digital age. In particular, rather than just looking at companies' market share as the antitrust laws did in the early 90s and 2000s, antitrust laws should look at how much data a company possesses when determining if it's a monopoly. And in this case, it's talking about companies like Google and Facebook who have data monopolies in various sectors. Smith says that companies can learn from these probes, and he knows from experience. He was the general counsel for Microsoft and an advisor of Bill Gates through Microsoft's own antitrust cases in the 90s and 2000s. And he says, I think you can think of Microsoft and the antitrust battles that started in the 1990s as sort of a technology's first collision with the modern world as we know it. Microsoft had to change. We had to do more to listen to other people, understand their concerns, and acknowledge that concerns, and then ultimately address them, and that required a lot of change. So this is, of course, talking about the U.S. in particular with antitrust laws, which is where the bulk of these companies are based. And, you know, I think anytime you have Microsoft chiming in on this, it's time to have a serious look at the large companies like Facebook.
Well, yeah, and don't be afraid of antitrust. I mean, so Microsoft went through you know what? They're still here. Still doing fine.
Yep.
Still, you know what I mean? Like antitrust, that's not bad. If you are a hardcore capitalist, then you should want regulations in place so this can happen, because it's actually antithetical to the whole concept of a free market if you have one player in it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And since the new product is data, well, this is something to think about. You know, like, why is it that everyone can make money off of your data except for you? That don't make any sense.
Yeah, and if these companies didn't have that, they wouldn't have been able to reach the prominence that they did.
Right.
So,
but still, I mean, it's yours. Like, and you get nothing out of it besides harassed by commercials and ads. Like, yeah. That's what you get. That's your part. Yay.
And, you know, just to say one final thing on this, when it comes to privacy and whatnot, yeah, granted the whole world changed in 2013 with Edward Snowden and whatnot, but that's privacy over the internet. People neglect to think that, oh, Google has all my search history. Facebook has all my messages and whatnot and more. And, you know, to Google's credit, they do have ways to, you know, if you want to be completely forgotten, if you want to delete everything you have, you can do that. Facebook, not so much, but it's something that should definitely be thought of. Is a monopoly somebody who controls the lion's share of personal data? And that's Facebook in this day and age for this.
Yeah, hell, Amazon knows how many times you buy toothpaste a month.
Yep, that's another big one.
You know what I mean? Like, there's some issues that we haven't updated. I mean, here in America, we haven't updated anything. Like, we need a 21st century approach to regulating technology like this, you know, which I'm not surprised. I mean, we have infrastructure from the 1920s. You know what I mean? So it's not a big surprise that we haven't caught up yet, but everyone needs to catch up. Like,
yeah,
it's been 20 years now since the world, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. We should start catching up at this point.
Indeed. And our last piece of tech news, Google had their Made by Google 2019 event this week with a bunch of new hardware being announced. In particular, it was announced that Google's Stadia video game streaming service will launch on October 19th. November 19th.
Mm-hmm.
You going to give that a try when it comes out?
They are well. I am not, because I don't want to have to both purchase the system and the game for a streaming service. Like, that's kind of weird to me. And I can't believe have you seen that they're claiming that it's going to be faster than consoles? Like, I mean, I know consoles are kind of slow, but I don't know.
We'll have to wait and see on that. There's lots of cloud stuff that could.
Yeah,
factor
that's
in.
Like. Crazy stuff. I mean, I like the idea of Stadia I like the idea of game streaming. I don't know if this is it. Just because, like, I think they should have some kind of a subscription library type service. I really don't like that you have to buy the games on top of it.
Yeah. They also announced the Pixel Buds, which are their competitor to AirPods. They also announced a Pixelbook Go, which is a high-end Chromebook for $699 or $649. Nest Wi-Fi wireless router, a Nest Mini for the smart home. But, of course, what everybody's talking about is the Pixel 4, their new flagship smartphone, 5.7 and 6.3-inch sizes, 6 gigabytes of RAM, very high-end Snapdragon chips. And, you know, the main reason, of course, everybody talks about a Pixel is the camera. It starts at $799 in the U.S., and it ships on October 24th. But the camera, if these photos are to be believed, is truly astounding. There are photos here that were taken just as demo photos after around the event in reviews by CNET, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they look good. They look good as you'd expect with a modern smartphone. But where things get really interesting is in the low light realm. In particular, Google has marketed the phone as being able to take photos of the sky at night and have it come out in a way that previously you could only do with a professional camera, with a tripod, and a long exposure lens.
That's and really cool.
Looking at these photos, it's hard to believe that these photos could be taken with a phone. It really is.
And think about, like, and wasn't that, like, the iPhone 11's main thing was the new camera?
Yeah.
And now, and now Pixel's got this new camera that can do crazy stuff, and it's $200 cheaper?
Yep.
Holy crap.
And,
now, I'm just saying.
And that says all you need to know about the way Google works and the way the Pixel phones work. So I think Google has succeeded in their hardware push.
At least on the phone angle, yeah.
Yeah. So. All right. That's it for tech news this week. We're going to wrap this show up shortly. So starting off with this, I'll just say that you can check out our Skill of the Month competitions going on here. We have our Dungeoneering Skill of the Month that just got underway yesterday, so no results to report on that. But if you want to sign up for our thieving competition that starts next Thursday on the 24th, just head over to rsbnb.com/SKOTM and click on the thieving button and you'll be able to sign up there. I think thieving would be a fun one to witness for a week until Halloween. It'd be interesting to see how much thieving XP can come in this day and age.
You know, thieving's great, especially in a week setting. Thieving is not so great in a month. I've done that. It's rough. So this will be much funner. That's after Dungeoneering. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. So let's look at our achievements this week. We do have a good number of them. So starting off, we have Oza Zoyo with 120 Slayer on the 16th. The Lion got 120 Constitution on the 16th as well. Then on the 15th, we have XG Wen YVAR X with 99 Runecrafting. Dr. Bruce with 99 Fletching on the 15th. And finally, Ezel with 120 Slayer on October 14th.
Nice. We also have Xenon Ray with 120 Slayer on the 13th. Great. Lorosaurus with 99 Agility on October 13th and 99 Farming on October 11th. We also have Pouncing with 99 Mining on October 11th and Delta with 99 Thieving on October 11th. Nice job, everybody.
Nice job indeed. All right. I think it's time for Pick of the Week. And, you know, we talked about this as something we should or shouldn't do, but I think given the amount of changes it's brought in, especially for you, this should be a good Pick of the Week. So go for it.
You know, this week, the pick of the week is iOS 13, and I just want to talk about a few of the accessibility features. Well, one accessibility feature in particular that they have just made so good now. And I know Shane probably has a million other things he could talk about with all the stuff that iOS 13 brought in. But for me, the major, major thing that it brought in is I use something called VoiceOver. And what that does is it makes it so that I don't have to see my phone necessarily.
Sure.
Wherever my finger touches, it reads that to me. So, like, if my finger touches, like, the time, it's going to say the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all. I mean, that's what it would do before, which was a great, great feature. I could touch an app. It would tell me the app. And then I would click on it. Everything on my phone is kind of like a double click because you have to, mm-hmm. Touch it. With iOS 13, they have just So the first time I found this out, like, I didn't even know it did this until after I'd updated my phone. I was reading Shane's farming article, and I had clicked on the picture he included, and it was like garden setting, man standing, what, you know, like it described.
It was describing a RuneScape screenshot.
Yes. Like, whoa. Like, that was crazy. And a lot of times, I can't see that stuff at all. Like, even before, like, I quit using Facebook because of all Facebook's problems, I still didn't use it a lot because I couldn't, like, my reader wouldn't read pictures like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, any, you know, how Facebook is, half of it is just memes being shared or whatever, you know, that kind of stuff. So now it will actually describe everything to me, like everything. I take a lot of photos for my work, and something I found the other day is while I'm taking pictures, if my phone's tilted, it just comes out and tells me tilted to the right now or tilted to the left. And so, like, so now I know if
it's
my
trying to align
on
your photos for you.
Yes. Yeah. Like, for a blind person, dude, that is it's really, really
it's almost
nice.
Unbelievable.
It is, and that's why, like, that's why I'm with Apple, and, you know, will be, like, you know, even like I said, you know, in the previous section before, yeah, the new Pixel, it's $200 cheaper. It's got, you know, a great camera and everything. But none of them have the accessibility that Apple has had. And this isn't new for Apple. Like, if you were a Mac user, you had access to accessibility features that I had to pay extra, like, lots of extra money for. And it was just included in the operating system. So they're still doing it, and they're still making it better. And I really love iOS 13. Like, it's been a game changer.
I'm able to
use my phone.
One of the great things about it that, you know, you've told me is that you can even speak to the phone and you can tell it to press certain buttons that you couldn't press before.
Yeah.
The entire thing is voice controllable now.
Yeah. And you know, we covered a story, you know, a few months back about people getting fired or in trouble because they were listening to conversations. Well, it kind of, like, I don't want to condone that, but let me say this. My phone hasn't made, like, a dictation error since iOS 13 came out.
You're right. It's gotten a lot better. I've noticed that.
So, I mean, you know, like, it's way better. Like, now if it messes up, it's like a legitimate mess up. Like, it can't recognize the difference between, you know, two or something. Like, you know, out of the three ways you would type that or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, like those types of things. But, I mean, it's not messing up every word I say like it used to. You know, like, we have several stories where nibbles became, well, not nibbles. So, like,
mm-hmm.
You know.
You guys could imagine what was there. But,
yeah.
My favorite thing about iOS 13, I know this is your pick of the week, is the quick path swipe typing feature. It's a little bit hard to get used to, but once you do, it's nice. You just drag your finger around. You can use that to generate words. And I mean, for long words, it's a lot faster than typing each one. Though you might still get better mileage if your phone is more attuned to the way you speak and that you only need to press a few letters and then the word appears right above. But I think we've had good luck with iOS 13 so far. So
yeah, it's been extremely good for me and Shane. I mean, feel free to jump. Like I said, you know, I know this angle of it, but I haven't explored each and every feature. I've just, it's just basically made my phone that was already the most usable phone I could have even more usable. So,
yep.
I mean, how's that for an endorsement? Right?
I agree. All right. So what have we been up to? I'll start this week just because you just had pick of the week. So this week on RS, my main focus has been on hunting and trying to get a couple of those eggs. And, you know, just to give an idea of how rare they are, I've only gotten one so far. So I don't know if I'm going to continue that or, you know, wait till launch. I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing big game hunting. The bait and whatnot that you can pick up along the way is good. And, you know, Jadinko hunting, decent hunter XP. And, I mean, if you use that to pick up a couple of eggs, why not, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So, but aside from that, as I mentioned, I've been farming ultra compost, so that's a good thing that I'm going to be having because, you know, I think we're going to want to have a lot of that when the new farming stuff comes out just to boost yields and ensure we're getting our bang for the buck when the seeds are expensive. So I've just been, you know, I guess getting ready for 120 farming to launch this week.
You're going to make so much money, dude. There's so much money to be made with 120 farming.
Oh, I think there will be.
Dude, I mean, have you been watching herbs? Like,
yep.
Dude, forget about it. It's going to stay that way for a while. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be this way for a while.
How about you?
Believe it or not, I've given up on my whole, like, I was making Elder Rune Body 5 so I could do those on double XP. Not doing that quite so much anymore. I made a whole inventory of them, and it took a really long time. So I have been farming like crazy. I have been farming like I can't ever remember farming before. I followed some of your tips on how to get around, and I have a nice little loop now. And I have been just farming herbs like crazy. I'm still doing my farm. I've actually added mushrooms into my farm runs, so I do those with every run at the swamp and the elf land, which helps out to feed the zygomites.
Mm-hmm.
It's really what I've been doing because. I mean, I was going to do herb lore anyway, and I was planning on trying to get most of my own herbs just to save money, but now it's, like, essential. Like, now I don't have a choice. Like, I have to. But because of the room that I have, like, in, like, I don't know. I'm probably less than 20 mil herb lore altogether. So I can gain, like, up to 180 mil, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we look at this stuff when it comes to DXP weekends and what you're going to do. So I have a lot of room in herb lore. Herb lore is one of the fastest next to summoning. So I was already going to do that. And so now I'm just trying to really stick with it and keep farming. And I found that it's way easier than I thought. Like I always felt it was a chore, but it doesn't feel so easier
when you get set up, isn't it?
Yeah, these presets are the bank, dude. It's so great. Like, I used to be afraid to have presets like that because I'm like, it's going to mess everything up. But now I can just run right back and hit a new preset, and I'm all good. Like, it's just beautiful. We've had some, you know, we really have had some good things, like, lately. We've had some good stuff.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, as we mentioned this week, there's also the Sliske set, which you can add to it. If her Brunn dies, you still get XP from it. And, you know, just in general, lots of farming stuff that's going to be able to be used. And, you know, with the changes the way of the beans are going to be ultra growth potions, there's going to be some fun stuff to be had with that, too, when 120 farming releases. So I'm really looking forward to all that.
All right. I actually kind of am now, too.
See, I told you you'd come around. I told you you'd come around. I told you you'd come around. But that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. So if you guys want full show notes, update.rsbnb.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on any podcast listener out there. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, YouTube, practically anything under the sun. Just head on over to update.rsbnb.com/subscribe and click on the one that you want, and you'll be taken directly to that feed for your preferred podcast listener. And with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. So take care, everyone.
See ya.